The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, as we're talking about mental health today, I'm delighted that we have Alison Keating with us, the practical psychologist. Her new book is It's All Too Much: Practical Ways to Pause Panic Attacks, to Reduce Feeling Overwhelmed, Reduce Anxiety, to Rediscover Everyday Joy. Alison, thank you very much for joining us. Panic attacks. What's a panic attack? How many people are likely to suffer from them?
A very large portion of people, and you wouldn't be guessing if you've had one, because the thing with a panic attack is it's the sudden onset that, I suppose, is the reason why it has the word attack in it. A lot of people would say to me that they were sitting on the couch watching TV, so it's not like they were being anxious during the day, and all of a sudden they get this rush of adrenaline and their heartbeat starts beating really fast. They can really feel tingling, so it can feel like a heart attack. People are terrified. It's very physical and psychological, in terms of you think you're actually going crazy. And they're words people say to me. They're like, most people end up in A&E thinking they're having a heart attack. And I'm really glad that they've gone to A&E, because you need to have, you know, any kind of sudden onset of any medical issue needs to be explored. And they're often quite upset when the person says, no, this is a panic attack. And they're like, no, it couldn't be. What I just experienced.
Why do people feel embarrassed to actually admit that they've had a panic attack?
It's so severe and it's so intense. And I suppose that's, by definition, that's what a panic attack is. It's this sudden onset. It's exceptionally intense. It's not even that they're embarrassed. They actually nearly don't believe that something that severe could be a panic attack, especially if they haven't experienced it before.
But do you understand why I'm saying,
yes,
about the feeling of embarrassment?
Oh, totally.
Because instead of, if it's something been physically wrong, it's like they admit that they're admitting that there's something wrong in their head.
Yes. I mean, there still is so much stigma, but I actually think for people who've never experienced a panic attack before, they're nearly scared that perhaps the person doesn't actually realise there's something really wrong with them. So that's the level of intensity with it. But yeah, we still have so much stigma with mental health to work through. We're getting better a little bit. But I suppose the whole premise of the book was that we'd have practical tools to know how to deal with, I suppose, the overwhelm and anxiety that I see that is increasing.
But if you get a panic attack, does that imply that there have been signs previously that you are stressed, that there's mounting anxiety, that when you actually look back in retrospect, you should see that there had been plenty of warning signals that this was about to happen?
I think a panic attack it's like the same mechanism as a faint. I think it nearly smacks you across the face and kind of reboots the system. And yes, it has been mounting for a long time, but to be honest, you've ignored the signs and it's in this constant push of, I'll just get through this week, I'll just get through this day. What I'm finding is that everyone's under so much time pressure, the demands. They can be conflicting demands, and people's time and energy is so stretched. So I think, yes, there definitely are signs. One of the main signs I would say are, I call them the three I's. So you find yourself more irritable, more intolerant and more impatient. And that often will be there for months before. And like, I often kind of laugh in session with people and say, look, everybody can't be that annoying. And you might find yourself sitting in traffic and they're like, oh my God, move. And you're giving out the traffic not moving. But it's that level of frustration that's been building because that overwhelm is there. So I think it is mental, but it also is very physical and emotional as well.
I suspect a lot of people listening are thinking either about themselves or thinking about loved ones who they now are thinking, my God, maybe that could be what is actually wrong with them.
Yeah.
So let's be positive.
Mm.
When you say it's all too much, what can you do to mitigate this?
I think becoming aware that how you're living your life, even though it may be our norm, it isn't actually normal. And making a kind of having a bit of a life audit and looking at your life and going, look, what areas of my life are not actually working at the moment? And there's no magic in this. You're not going to magically stop working tomorrow, or people have bills to pay. And I suppose the cost of living is part of the issue. People are working very hard because they have to. But you can look at your life and go, what areas are really draining me? What areas am I finding I'm really struggling with? What help can I actually get? Do I need to speak to my doctor? Would it be good to talk to a therapist? You know, what help can I get if you have a family within my family? What help could I get at work? So at a practical level, who can support you in a time where it just feels like, I imagine it like a tsunami. So So when you say about people when kind of that sudden onset of panic occurs, often they've experienced, you know, that generalized anxiety and that's been there. But to me, that doesn't present as quickly in therapy as a panic attack because it's so, you know, it you can't function at that level. But when you go through periods of having, say, anxiety and you're worrying a lot persistently about everything, when that passes, you think, oh, that was just a tough time. So my perspective over 20 years of working with people is I don't think anxiety is just about yourself. I don't think it's just about self-care. When I look around, I do think it's systemic within our whole society. So I think we need more support from government. We need, like today is very important. It's World Mental Health Day. But to me, every day is Mental Health Day. So what are you doing in your life? And there are really straightforward things that you can actually do. And most of them are basic and boring. I call them stay at my B&B. They're basic and boring. They're all the things you actually know. Like I'd say to people, look, can you go to bed 10 minutes earlier? You know, did you miss your lunch today? I don't know. When people can say to me, I had no lunch today, I'm like, I don't understand. How did you not eat lunch? But we're not looking to the basics. So we're pushing past our physical needs. And then I think our mind is the last one to give up. So I think that's why the panic attacks kick in sometimes, because you have been overwhelmed for quite some time. But what can you actually do? I think it's about saying, okay, enough. This is enough. I need to reduce some areas of stress. And then I suppose what I'm looking at is polyvagal theory, which is the science of safety.
Polyvagal?
Yes.
The science of safety.
The science of safety. What it is I suppose, do you know, say if you're walking in a dark alleyway and you heard footsteps behind you, you wouldn't have to think, oh, I need to be scared. You instinctively can feel that. So you have these internal messages that tell you, oh, there's something wrong. And it's a survival instinct. With anxiety, it's like we're in that hypervigilant state and we're reading all things as a threat. So even an email looks threatening and we're finding it difficult to distinguish between what's a threat and what's a real danger. So polyvagal theory looks at the vagus nerve. I'm sure many people have heard about it before. But what I hope people get out of the book is that they actually go, right, what can I actually do first thing in the morning? So a very simple exercise is called a heel drop. And it's what you do, you literally stand on your toes and you clunk down into your heels. And what it's doing is it's creating proprioception. So we kind of come out of our minds and back down into our bodies. I would like people to start doing these things, say at work, you know, just go for a quick walk around the block, or say you're having a panic attack at work. You could just go into the toilet and run the water past your wrists. I think it's about understanding, okay, my nervous system feels overwrought. What simple things can I do that were within my reach in an everyday way to reduce that down?
I'm sure there are many listeners who are wondering about their workplaces mm-hmm. and whether that contributes to the stress and whether they're getting almost gaslighted by their employers and been told, we really care about your well-being and what's best for your health. And actually, even in supposedly addressing those issues, make things tougher and worse for people.
Well, I think resilience has been weaponized within organisations. And it's like, we need you and you do resilience training to learn how to become more resilient. When I would often stand there and wonder, well, perhaps there is too much work. Perhaps the five jobs they have going at the moment can't take a sixth and you want it done yesterday. So this is what I mean about in terms of it's all too much.
Yeah, we care so much about you. We want you to go and take your lunch break, but actually we want you to do more work and have fewer people on the team.
Or even take your lunch break and listen to someone talk about wellness. So like, leave us alone. Let us have our lunch break in peace. And then actually maybe look at something that might be more useful, where someone might be able to leave work half an hour earlier or something that would actually be of benefit to them. So I think...
I'm sorry, this resilience that's been... And I understand the importance at times of resilience.
Oh, absolutely.
And it is important, but it's almost like the modern version of get a grip on yourselves and just go back to work.
You see, resilience in its proper, you know, form is very, very important. And resilience is actually the ability to bounce back after adversity. But how it's used nowadays is that you should be able to manage your stress no matter how much work or situations you have coming at you. And I think that's where it's weaponized.
Okay. So what do you do though when you're in that situation then? Because even if you want to try and do all the right things for yourself and you use this book as tools and you still find that you have these external pressures been placed upon you.
So, I mean, a lot of organizations they have employee assistance programs. Sometimes they have, you know, really good managers. And when they don't, And when this, you know, when the organization perhaps isn't going to change, then it is useful to question, how sustainable is it for me to stay within this organization? So I think that's, I think when you start a new job, it's a good idea to nearly have your exit plan already on day one. And it's not that you're going to flake out and leave, but I think we just have to question, if all these areas of stress are flooding into my life and it's having an impact on my mental and physical health, if you're coming home at the end of the day and you're absolutely exhausted, what I would see a lot of times is people who are like in a state of what I call high functioning anxiety, they might be doing really well at work. And then when they get home in the evening, they have absolutely nothing left in the tank. And then they find that they're kind of arguing with their spouse or the partner, whoever's in the house, and they don't even want to be like that. So they go to bed feeling guilty. This is just where I want people to question, what can I do this? What can I do differently?
Although, Alison, would it not also be fair to say there are times when life is tough, and I'm sure there are lots of people listening who might have to care for other people, mm-hmm. which can be very, very difficult to do. Maybe if you're caring for ill parents or ill children or loved ones, and you maybe need a little bit of love yourself rather than always been caring. There are people who have financial difficulties who are trying to get out from underneath that, which is easier said than done. There are times when life just is tough, and then there are times maybe you just have to dig in and get on with it. Or is that sounding a bit too unfair?
No. Genuinely, I understand, like, I'm kind of at the forefront of how difficult life is for people. There's nothing in this book that I would find, say, annoying. Like, I get a little bit annoyed when self-care is kind of like, just have a bubble bath. A bubble bath is not going to pay your bills. It just isn't. And I am fully aware that you sometimes don't have a choice. But what's beautiful about the way your brain works is if you find some ways. So I suppose I talk about, when I say about the everyday joy of enough, it's about maybe seeking out glimmers. So say your life is going through a really tough time, or maybe it's chronically tough. And for some people, that is the situation. Where can you find, and I suppose a glimmer is the opposite of a trigger. So we all know triggers when we're having an argument with something and it brings up a very strong feeling for us. But a glimmer is the opposite of that. It's the antidote. And I think they're in the very small moments. It could just be a cup of tea, sitting outside for 5 minutes.
Finding the simple joys of life.
Yes, it's the simple joys of life where you kind of have a moment and there's a sense of warmth inside. We don't need any money for that. Like, to be quite honest, I think less is more. And it's about the joy of enough in life and looking at, well, am I doing too much? How can I actually bring this down? Is that possible? No, actually, it's not possible at the moment. What support can I get? Actually, I can't get any support in it, but maybe I'm going to start becoming a glimmer seeker, where I seek out small moments every day just to fill myself back up a little bit.
I hope this is the moment for some of our listeners.
Yes.
Alison Keating, great book. It's All Too Much. The Practical Psychologist, Alison Keating. It's all a very positive, more than one glimmer in the book for people to take a hold of. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.